Hello and welcome to History for Weirdos.
We're your hosts, Andrew
and Stephanie,
and each week we're going to take you on a journey into the strange, obscure, and relentlessly entertaining corners of human history.
Now listen up, friends, because it's about to get weird. Welcome back, weirdos!
Woohoo!
We are very happy to be back with another episode.
Yes, I know. And we're getting to the point now where I don't even know the number off the top of my head anymore.
Oh, neither do I. But this is episode number... And we hope you enjoy it. As we get started, before Andrew shares the really cool story that I'm sure he has in store for me and for you all.
Oh, yes.
I did want to share some like fun information. We received an email saying that our history podcast has been selected by some panelists for FeedSpot as one of the top 15 human history podcasts. Yay!
Clapping for us.
So we're going to link that FeedSpot article in the show notes for today.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just such a fun, nice thing to hear. And it's because you all are listening. So
yeah.
Thank you.
No, guys, thank you so much. Honestly, again, like I can't overstate this. It always makes our day when we see these types of things. And mm-hmm. again, it is like Stephanie's right. Like it's because of you guys. So yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you as always for the lovely messages we get and just for being here and listening with us today.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this is airing on the week of Thanksgiving, which... You know, many know it's a holiday in the United States.
Oftentimes stressful because of family.
Yeah, oftentimes not. It's about stuffing your face and getting stressed out and things like that. But Andrew and I were talking the other day, really about how messed up it is that we both grew up in the 90s. We're both from Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Really being told the Thanksgiving myth.
Right, absolutely. And how it's what, like, pilgrims and Indians come together and they sing Kumbaya and mm-hmm. it's all, like, happy-go-lucky. And that's not the case.
That's not the case. It was definitely, like, depicted as, like, oh, the native people were like, wow, welcome, visitors. Here, take everything. We'll teach you how to, like, make corn and stuff. We'll have a nice meal. This will be fun.
Like, I'm sure there's an element of truth to that, but it's so overhyped and, like, overplayed, and it's just not real.
Right? These folks, there's so much American history prior to it even being America, right, that we mm-hmm. don't learn about in school. There's just so much native history and pride here that is totally like downplayed, overlooked,
right,
straight up warped. And it's funny that you mentioned that there must be some thread of truth in that. I was looking into this and I found this Smithsonian Magazine article called "The Myths of the Thanksgiving Story and the Lasting Damage They Imbue." And the correspondent named Claire Bugos, I'll link it in the show notes as well. She interviews the author of David Silverman, the author of This Land Is Their Land, and it focuses on the story of the Wampanoag Indians in the Plymouth Colony.
Oh, cool.
Super, super interesting. So I'm going to share that in the show notes for folks to read, because I think it's super important to like educate ourselves on the truth.
Right.
Obviously, that's what this whole podcast is about, is history, and oftentimes history is ugly.
Yeah, I'd say most of history, the vast majority of history is pretty ugly.
Right, and that doesn't mean that we don't acknowledge it and look at it. So
mm-hmm.
we definitely wanted to take a minute to acknowledge that, just because I think you can still enjoy the holiday, but recognize the heaviness of it for so many people, especially for the native community here.
Right. I completely agree. I think it is a holiday to, you know, give thanks for what you have and to listen to your annoying uncle rant on politics, but also to like really understand the history of this, the real history of this.
Yeah. I think it's much more empowering for everyone. And I think what's beautiful about understanding history and the truth of it is it allows us to make a better future.
Right.
So we don't make the same mistakes.
Damn.
Damn.
So, that's good, baby.
So we hope, you know, if you celebrate, that you enjoy the holiday. We hope you read the article or do whatever research you want to do on your own to learn right. more. But without further ado, my love, what do you have for us this week?
Nice. Okay, my turn. Okay, so we're going to go a little bit before the time of Thanksgiving. In fact, a couple thousand years before.
Okay.
So
taking us back.
We're going back. We're going to the ancient world. And I think that the phrase stranger than fiction really applies to the story because it just gets weird. It's interesting.
That's why we're here.
That's why we're here. It's a weirdo. They're a bunch of weirdos.
It's a bunch of weirdos
in the best way possible.
Yeah, we want to hear some stuff.
It's an interesting story. In fact, the story is about a group of individuals who probably or almost certainly would have absolutely been known as weirdos in their time. But again, in the best way possible.
Okay. They would have been going against the grain.
Yes. Sort of. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. In fact, you know, I'm just surprised that Netflix hasn't made a story on this yet because it's right up their alley.
Oh, you're getting there. Someone.
Yeah. Netflix.
Works at Netflix.
Yo, Netflix,
listening.
Hit me up.
Yeah. Someone.
Pay me money. Give me that bag.
Please.
Because this is about an elite military unit made up entirely of homosexual men.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you mean that as in it was intentional?
It was intentionally.
That it was just gay men.
It is just gay men.
And this is in the ancient world.
This is in the elite, ancient world.
Elite. There were elite military groups in the ancient world?
There were.
Wow.
Yes. The setting of the story takes place, as a matter of fact, in ancient Greece, unsurprisingly.
Unsurprisingly.
So before we fully get into it, I feel like I have to give just a bit of a backstory.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go through it quickly, just so you guys can have a bit of understanding, especially if you're not familiar with, you know, ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Because it is a very different world to the one that we know now.
Of course.
So here's some backstory. The era that we know as ancient Greece starts sometime between the years 800 and 750 BC. Mm-hmm. The region was coming out of a time known as the Greek Dark Ages, and this was a time where we know pretty much nothing about because any sort of prior civilization had completely collapsed and had just gone to the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, writing had been completely lost during this time, like the ability to write.
There are writings from prior.
There was writings from prior.
Yeah.
And then
people forgot how.
People forgot how. Language is just, I don't know, we don't know what happened to the language. It just went away.
Everyone but was just really not communicative during yeah. this time.
But the Greek language that would arise after these dark ages would be completely different than the one that was spoken from before.
And is the Greek language from after the Dark Ages, is that different than modern Greek as well?
Yes, but it's much more closely related.
Okay.
So it's what would eventually become
So that one evolved Greek. Into like the modern Greek language, but right. this is so separate from the language before the
Yeah,
Dark
the language
Ages.
Before, completely different alphabet. Whoa. It was just very different.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's insane. In fact, I saw this Quora article once, quick aside, where it showed, like, you know, ancient Greek. Mm-hmm. Like, and then the guy he's like, I'm kind of just an average Greek person, and I'm going to try to, like, you know, read this. And so,
I'm an average Greek person.
I know. I don't know what that meant, but, like, college educated, I guess, or whatever. But he basically said, like, the ones that are really far back, like, the original versions of, like, you know, the Iliad from, like, the 8th century BC was really hard to decode, whereas the ones from, like, you know, later on, like, 2nd or 1st century BC were a lot easier.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, but still different. But anyways... in case you were wondering, the time before the Greek Dark Ages was known as the Bronze Age, FYI.
And then there was the Bronze Age collapse, you guys.
Which then created the Greek Dark Ages.
The Greek Dark Ages.
Boom, you know what's up, babe.
I live with you. Something's got to stick. I'll be brushing my teeth, I'm reading a nice book, trying to get to bed, I'm doing dishes, whatever I'm doing in my life. And Andrew's yeah. like... Did you know about the Mycenaean Greeks and the Bronze? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, no.
No, I don't really care that much.
Save it for the podcast, sir.
Yeah.
Which you've done.
Which I've kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. whatever. But anyway, suffice it to say, there was not a lot going on during the Greek Dark Ages except people struggling to survive. That's pretty much all there was going on.
Sounds dark.
So, by the mid-8th century BC, roughly 750 BC, we start to see some signs of development. Communities become cities, which are called poleis, or a polis in the singular.
Oh, okay. A polis, like Annapolis.
Annapolis. Yes, exactly.
Cool.
In fact, yeah, it's a common root word, like metropolis, Annapolis, Persepolis, etc. Art, writing, and even organized military become a thing now for the first time in centuries. And the various Greek people take to the seas and start settling in colonies over the next few centuries, you know, as far west as modern-day France.
Wow.
Yeah, and as far, and then, you know, along, like, the Black Sea and the coast of Asia Minor, which is now Turkey.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So, yeah, kind of all over.
Mm-hmm.
These city-states, or, you know, poleis, become the dominant form of Greek nations. Mm-hmm. And it's important to note that, unlike today, there was no unified Greece.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that being said, there was a watershed moment that happened in the late 500s BC and early 400s BC, the Greco-Persian Wars.
Oh.
And this is the only time, really, in, like, Greek history up to that point where there is, like, for a very short period, like, a Pan-Hellenic, like, army, right? All these Greek poleis. Yeah, they unified against a common threat, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very long story short, the Greeks win, and the two major powers that come out of this are the polis of Athens and the polis of Sparta, which, you know, I'm sure many listeners have heard of those, like, city-states.
That's kind of, like, where we start, where I at least started learning about it in, like, school.
Exactly, yeah. And those are the two that are always the most talked about.
Yeah.
Makes sense. To oversimplify, like, the next 80 years or so, the Athenians and Spartans eventually come to blows in a war known today as the Peloponnesian War.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
you love the Peloponnesian War.
I do, yes. It's just because it's super fascinating. It's kind of like the first war in known human history that was like a quote-unquote like world war. Not like total world war, obviously, but like a lot of different major powers from a vast area
took sides.
Yeah, it took sides against each other.
Oh, okay.
It was mainly like Sparta and everyone versus Athens, but again,
Sparta and everyone versus Athens.
But yeah, and it's still screw like Athens. I mean, Sparta won, but like it took like 30 years, so
wow.
Yeah, it was a long, long time. But anyways, yeah, long story short, Sparta wins. Sparta is now effectively the de facto ruler of all of Greece, but this was not to last. Bum bum duh.
Very good.
Thank you. Yes, I was looking for your approval there.
I'm glad I got it. Yawn.
Okay, maybe not so great then. Anyways, back to our narrative now.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough backstory. So the year is 382 BC, and Sparta has hegemony, you know, over the Greeks, and it's been that way for like roughly 20 years.
How'd you say it? Hegemony?
Hegemony. Yeah.
I thought it was hegemony.
Like you say hegemon, but I've heard both actually.
Okay.
Or hegemon.
It's
one of
those words that I almost only ever read.
Right.
But never say aloud.
I mean, it's okay. In my TikTok, like people always, they're like, you say this wrong. And it's funny, like cause half the time I'm like, no, I know for 100% what, like I am correct in this. And it's just, it's really funny that, you know, people just, they always want to correct your...
Yeah,
I'm not saying you did, but just like in
general. No, I wasn't trying to correct. I was curious because I want to sound smart.
You want to sound smart?
I want to sound smart moving forward.
No, I gotcha. I think it's kind of like, you know, like what that one linguist said, as long as you kind of understand what the person's saying,
yeah,
it's like it's the right way of saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially because it's like literally an ancient word. Okay, where am I? Oh, yeah, that's right. So the Spartans had just installed a pro-Spartan puppet government in the polis of Thebes.
Mm-hmm.
Thebes is going to be very important coming up. The two Theban leaders are now enter the narrative. I'm going to butcher these guys' names. Pelopidas, I think, and Epaminondas. Okay, let me try to say this. Epaminondas. I think that's right.
That sounds right.
Epaminondas. And to my Greek, if anyone's Greek, I apologize in advance.
We're really sorry.
Yeah, I'm just going to butcher these words and I apologize. I'm trying my best.
If anyone wants to send us a voice note,
yeah,
with I would, the appropriate pronunciation, we'd appreciate it.
We really would. We're not even being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Pelopidas was in exile in Athens while Epaminondas was inside the city, secretly, or, you know, possibly not so secretly, according to some sources, stoking anti-Spartan sentiments.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, because, you know,
he's stirring the pot.
People are like, yo, like, Sparta, like, Thebes had been allied with Sparta during the Peloponnesian War, but then afterwards they're like, well, we don't like you that much. We just did, we disliked Athens even more.
Yeah.
So, but now they're like,
Athens. Now we're stuck with you and we don't really like you.
And they actually ironically kind of like Athens. They're starting to get buddy-buddy with them.
Okay.
To make things like oversimplified.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really, we're still kind of doing, I guess we are in the narrative, but it's still a little bit of the backstory of what is to come. Like the central,
context.
Yeah, the context. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You're so smart.
Mm, thank you.
Okay. So this is where it kind of gets a little funny. The year is 379 and a plot is hatched. Yeah, on the night that there was to be a festival honoring essentially what we would call free love.
Like, oh.
You know, insert hippie joke here.
Uh-huh.
A group of Thebans and allied Athenians would infiltrate the city disguised and dressed as women.
Mm-hmm.
And this was under the guise of seducing the pro-Spartan, like, puppets, essentially.
Uh-huh.
The puppet politicians.
The political puppets?
Yeah, the political puppets. They assassinated them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So their plan was to seduce them, to get them vulnerable, and then kill them.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. And this was during, like, a free love celebration?
Right.
So was it, what did that entail, do you know? Is that, like
you could, you know,
public...
You could, I don't know what exactly it entails, but essentially it means that, you know, men, because of course a woman couldn't, like, in this is just typical in ancient Greek society, like, you know, have adult relations, like, outside of marriage. Right, and it's...
Fair game.
Fair game.
For men to do it.
For men.
To initiate.
Yes.
But not, like, a wife couldn't go out and be like, yeah, I'm going to go find someone for the night.
Yeah,
but a
absolutely
man
not. Yeah.
That's all of human history right there, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
It's funny because later in Hellenistic societies, it changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at this point, no way. Yeah. It's still like very much so a patriarchal society.
Yes.
Like in any of... Ironically, Sparta is one of the more like quote-unquote liberal.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to get into it because it's really not part of this story. But like, it's funny because Athens always gets credit for being the one that's like, you know, they're the one that has democracy.
Very forward thinking.
Very forward thinking. But mm-hmm. It was really the Spartans that were the ones that had like universal education for both men and women.
Oh, okay.
And it was not the Athenians that had that. I thought, anyways, I'm just a nerd, so.
No, that's okay. All I hear is that the patriarchy is not chill. I am not a fan.
You're not a fan?
No. That may come as a surprise to you, but...
That is surprising. Huh. Weird. Okay. I would have thought you would.
So they assassinate them.
So they assassinate them. And through the use of, like, their Athenian allies, the Hoplites,
uh-huh.
like, basically, like, the soldiers, Athenian soldiers, they kicked the Spartan garrison out of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So now Thebes is free from Spartan rule.
Yay, Thebes!
So, obviously, Sparta was not going to take this lightly. They did not appreciate this.
Right. Like, I don't appreciate the patriarchy.
Right.
I understand.
Sparta did not appreciate being kicked out of Thebes. And they would send military units to devastate the surrounding area outside of Thebes. So, in response to this, a chap by the name of Gorgidas, whom we know very little about.
Okay.
Yeah, he forms a unit... That would be known as the Sacred Band of Thebes.
Oh, that's a good band name.
I know, Sacred Band of Thebes. Anyways, and this is the 150 pairs of male lovers who would comprise the most elite military unit of the entire polis.
What?
Yes.
So it was so, like they picked couples?
Yes, male couples. And I'll like later on I'll get into like more specifics, but you know what's really funny about this is that the inspiration comes from or what we think comes from none other than Plato, the philosopher.
Oh. But I guess maybe you'll answer this. I'm just surprised
like
that they found couples. Like that many couples. It's a lot.
Well, it's because you also have to understand too that
like that many couples that were like, this sounds like a great mission for me. I'm well trained and my partner's also down.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective too. It's also, you know, something to note too is like the way that we view, you know, like
couples
being
different.
Gay or straight or whatever, that they didn't exist back then.
Right. I think we may have talked about it or mentioned it in another episode, but that I do know that they didn't have the construct, I guess, of like, for men at least, I don't know about for women, but for men, they didn't really think of it as being gay. It was just a common, like just a normal way to have relationships, which it is. So they were very advanced in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. They were. No, just because like in some ways, like I think they were advanced, but then also in other ways, like they weren't because a lot of them involved children.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, you know, like in some ways they were advanced, in other ways not as much.
Right.
And I guess that's just humanity, unfortunately.
Yeah, of course. But it just, you know, I think it's nuts that it's something that's very natural became perverted into something that was not natural.
Right, exactly.
When it's literally, as we could see here, been around since ancient times.
Yes, like the 1920s. A little bit before the 1920s, I suppose.
So they have 150 gay male couples.
Yes, and this comes possibly, and again possibly, from the famous philosopher Plato, who would, you know, of course, then, you know, go on, who learned from Socrates and would then go on and teach Aristotle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because I think that's super interesting. In his famous work titled Symposium, he states that an army composed of such men could conquer the entire world.
You know what? Hell yeah.
Well, you know, this is the crazy thing. So whether, you know, that's the case or not, you know, can be debated. But what is certain is that this military unit was effective.
I'm sure.
They were very effective. So
interesting.
Military units comprised of 300 men specifically, you know, not necessarily, you know, homosexual, you know, lovers.
Yeah.
Were not uncommon in ancient Greece. In fact, you know, the most famous of them is, you know, the 300 Spartans at Thermopylae, who was subject of that 2006, I believe, movie, 300.
Oh, yeah,
by Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is Sparta. Yeah.
I never saw it.
Oh, it's excellent. There is a very awkward sex scene.
Yeah, you told me. Please tell them.
I'm going to tell you guys. So I saw this movie when I was 14 years old, right, in theaters, and I saw it with my grandmother. And there is a very graphic sex scene in there.
Because it's in slow motion,
and it's in slow motion, yes.
And it's a threesome?
No, it's just... Oh. It's just...
Was I hyping it up even more
in
my
mind?
Yeah,
you were, yeah. But yeah, no, it's just, you know, it's King Leonidas and his wife, and they are just, you know, going at it. And I had to sit through that with my grandma.
How uncomfortable for both of you.
Yeah, it felt like it lasted, like, ages.
Like 6 hours, and it was like, probably, like, a 2-minute scene.
Yeah, but it felt like it was the entirety of the Bronze Age.
I bet. That's so uncomfortable. 14. Oh my god, I would have died.
Yes.
But that's, in the movie 300... Is it specifically the 300? Are they also gay men?
No.
Oh, okay.
So this unit of 150 like male couples, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is revolutionary that we know of. This was unprecedented.
This was the first time they tried.
Yes, but not the first like unit made up of specifically 300 men. For some reason, that was a big theme in Greek amongst different
polis.
Yeah, no, San Diego.
That's anyways. So interesting that they were loyal to that number.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, so in 375 BC, the sacred band would have its very first test in what would be known as the Battle of Tegra.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just want to note that, you know, Pelopidas had now assumed command of the band, as it seemed that our boy Gorgidas had disappeared from the historical record, you know, possibly dying right before the battle. We don't know.
I was going to say, he probably died.
He just drops off completely.
Yeah.
The Thebans were outnumbered, like, 2 to 3 times by the Spartans.
Oh my god.
And however, though, the phalanx of the sacred band broke through the Spartan lines with the help of the Theban cavalry and won the day.
Wow.
Being incredibly outnumbered. It was a smaller battle for sure.
Okay.
Like there was only maybe 500 Thebans and possibly like, you know, 1,500 Spartans. So it was a small battle, but still, like, being heavily outnumbered, that it's kind of incredible.
Yeah, and at this point, was Spartan culture, is this the Spartan culture that we know that's really known for its warfare?
Yes, in fact, it's funny you say that. This was, this was an incredible achievement because the Spartans had previously never lost a pitched battle where they had numerical superiority.
Oh my never. God.
This was the very first time. And in fact, the success would be followed up within an even more incredible victory at what would be known as the Battle of Leuctra.
Okay.
So in that battle, fought in 371 BC, the Sacred Band fought directly against the elite Spartan hoplites and broke through their lines despite being outnumbered again.
Wow.
And so this one was a really important battle. This one, in fact, I think a lot of historians call this the most prolific battle of Greeks versus Greeks in, like, the ancient world and ancient history.
Oh my god.
Yeah, because this this ended Spartan hegemony in all of Greece. Yeah, sorry if you guys hear that little, like, tip taps. It's Stella just walking around.
She says hi.
She says hi, guys. She's our little weirdo.
So that's huge. This is huge.
Yeah, so now it's essentially Thebes has hegemony over all of Greece.
Thebes.
So they went from being like literally like, you know, having us taken over by the Spartans to, you know, controlling most of Greece in a matter of like 10 years.
Because of the Sacred Band.
In large part, yeah. Because of the Sacred Band. They were like who's the most badass like fighting force in America, like American
the
like
SEALs.
The SEALs, or there's, I know there's even groups within the SEALs that are like the badasses of the SEALs. But yeah, whoever like that would be.
They're like the elite of the elite.
The elite of the elite. That's who like the Sacred Band were.
Wow.
They're all like, you know, together. You know, or...
That's so interesting. Okay, I have so many questions, but yes. I don't know if you're gonna like get to
them. I'm gonna get to a little bit you know, like the story is kind of coming to a close, but before I do, I want to go into a little bit about like the relationships and like what
exactly
made
what...
up the Sacred Band. Yeah. So, you know, first of all, they didn't belong to any sort of class. Like, they were from all the classes of, Theban society, right? Like, whether they were high class or, like, the very bottom.
Okay.
I don't know a whole lot about their class system, to be honest, but they were, you know, it was irrespective of that, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it was simply due to merit and their...
Wow, that's so
yeah.
cool. That's very
that's
interesting
why they were
for
so
the time.
Good.
Yeah.
Right, that's why they were so good.
They're like, we just want the best. It doesn't matter, like, who your parents are or what part of the city you're from.
Exactly.
We just want the best.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the 150 couples consisted of an older Orestes lover. This is kind of like the English equivalent.
Okay.
And a younger Romanes, or beloved. So an older man and a young man. I'm really hoping it's not. Mm. I think the young man was, like, 18 and older, but... But possibly not, yeah.
Right. But so it sounds like the idea is mentorship.
Yes. And so, like, and there's a lot of the ancient, and that's the problem with ancient history is, like, mm-hmm. you get a lot of historians that, or, you know, the ancient historians that give conflicting accounts.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Which is annoying. So, like, the later Greco-Roman Polyanus, yes, his name is Polyanus.
Sorry.
I knew you were going to laugh. I mean, to be fair, I laughed at that before, so.
What an unfortunate name for today.
Yeah, I know. Polyanus. I can't help it now. So he described the band as men, quote unquote, devoted to each other by mutual obligations of love.
Mm.
So kind of cool.
You know,
it sounds good. Also, according to another Greco-Roman historian, Plutarch, he's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The men took sacred vows at the altar of Aiolos, mm-hmm. who was a male lover of Heracles.
Hey, Heracles!
Or Hercules would be the Roman equivalent.
Yeah. So they're basically married.
They kind of are. Yeah, like, it's not like... So in traditional in Greek society, and this is a vast, like, oversimplification, but, like, typically, when you were younger, you could have, like, you know, male lovers and
your
all
wife.
That.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, but eventually, when you got older, though, you're supposed to just be with your wife, really, and, like...
To procreate.
And, yeah. Obviously, you could, you know...
Men had sexual liberties.
Right, and...
Obviously, they could participate with men or women.
Right, with, yeah. Usually, yeah. though, by men, it was boys.
Children,
yeah.
Right. Oh, my God. How times have changed. Hopefully.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I'm not going to get too much into that. But yeah, that, generally speaking, like, so that's what's kind of odd is that they were men, you know, together.
Both men.
Yeah, both men. Yeah, together.
At least in their social construct, the younger man was still seen as a man, not a boy.
Right. He was still a man, like a young man, but.
Right. For younger. Them, who knows what age that is? Maybe it's 18, maybe it's 16, but like a man in their society.
Right.
That's exactly. So interesting.
You know, and also, you know what's super interesting is that these men were became the first permanent standing army in the history of Greece.
Wow.
Yeah, like, as all soldiers before were either mostly citizen soldiers, right? So, like, part-time. They'd, like, fight in times of war, and then, you know, they would go back to being, you know, farmers or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, or, yeah. You know, or mercenaries, obviously.
Yeah.
So this was interesting, like, the first state-sponsored, like, you know, standing military unit.
That's so crazy to think about because we think that is so standard with any nation.
Like now, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, standing armies were, I think it was the Assyrians in the 7th century BC were the first that we know of to create a standing army. And it didn't last very long. I know, right? Like even the Romans didn't have standing armies until the very end of the 2nd century BC.
Yeah.
Before then, you know, when they fought in like the Hannibal and
uh-huh.
and you know all the other people that they fought before, that those were citizen soldiers. They were not standing armies.
That's so nuts.
I know, right? So also, I forgot to put in my notes, but I think it's important to mention that a lot of our information about Thebes comes from Xenophon,
mm-hmm.
and he was an Athenian, and he was kind of a dick.
Yeah, well, his name sounds like an itch cream or something.
No, I actually love his name, Xenophon, with an X. But yeah, he was kind of a dick. Like, he was very anti-Thebes.
Oh.
And so, like, that's, but he is, it's because of him, though, that we know so much about it. And that's why.
So,
yeah.
It's, like, biased, though.
It's definitely biased. And it's also, you know, part of the reason why we know a lot more about Sparta and Athens
mm-hmm.
and not as much about Thebes, even though they were a powerhouse.
Because he's like, I don't really like Thebes.
Yeah, he's like, I don't like him.
I'm not going to write about him.
Yeah, I know, I don't like him. I don't like him. I kind of do like him, but I also don't like him at the same time.
I love that you have preferences for your ancient historians.
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. Like, Polybius is probably my favorite. Okay, I'm just gonna stop.
No. Do you have an outright least favorite?
An outright least favorite?
Or you're like, screw that guy.
I don't think so. Not off the top of my head, but give me like maybe a couple weeks and I can come up with one.
Which of the Plinys do you prefer?
Oh, definitely Pliny the Younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a pen pal of Trajan.
Yeah.
The Roman Emperor. Yeah, he was a good guy. Also, but I do like Pliny the Elder. He died in Vesuvius.
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
Like on trying his way to
save,
there.
Yeah, he was trying to save his friend.
Yeah.
He died. Poor
Some
guy.
Some rich lady, right? In the villa.
Yeah, I wonder if he was like, you know. Anyways, back to the story here. Weirdly enough, so we don't know a lot about what happens to the sacred band between the victory at Leuctra in 371 BC and 338 BC.
Okay.
And I'll get into the importance of 338 BC in a second here. But we can assume that they were still one of the most elite fighting forces in all of Greece, if not the preeminent fighting force
mm-hmm.
in Greece. However, there was another force on the horizon that was filling the vacuum that had been put into place by all the fighting between the Greeks, right? There was so much death, and I think population had declined pretty drastically.
Ugh, war.
Power vacuum. And Macedonia, a Hellenistic kingdom.
Aw, snap.
Oh, yeah, you know where this is going. Macedonia, a Hellenistic kingdom in the northern part of Greece, was just mm-hmm. on a run, let's just say. And it was become the preeminent power of all the Greek-speaking peoples.
Mm-hmm.
So the king of Macedon was a man by the name of Philip II.
He's an important father of someone.
Yes, we'll get into that.
Okay.
We will get into that, yes. And in fact, that his son will play a part in the demise of the sacred band.
Oh my goodness.
I know. It's actually pretty intense. So ironically, funny enough, though, Philip II was a political prisoner of Thebes during the Battle of Leuctra.
Oh, wow.
As a young man.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, so he was there. And it was the sacred band's victory that probably gave him a few ideas of his own.
Okay.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mwah.
So by 338 BC, though, Philip was effectively in control of almost all of Greece through both diplomacy and through his revolutions in reforming the phalanx.
Okay.
So basically the Greek phalanx had been the same for centuries. And, you know, his phalanx, called the Macedonian phalanx, basically, he did a lot of different things, but the most important thing he did was he increased the length of the spears, and they were called sarissas now.
Oh, cool.
I forgot what the normal Greek spear was called, but it's not important. I'm not going to bore you with any more details, honestly, because it's not really important to the story.
Okay.
Just know that the Macedonian phalanx was far superior to the Greek phalanx and would become like a gold standard until the Roman legions, essentially.
Okay, everyone, take notes.
Take notes.
Macedonian
phalanx.
Phalanx greater than Greek.
Greek phalanx, yeah.
Got it.
They had really long spears.
Really long spears.
Called sarissas.
Called sarissas.
There you go.
Got it.
You got it. There. You should just be a teacher.
Yeah, I'm going to be a professor now.
There you go. So the ultimate showdown would take place in what would be known as the Battle of Chaeronea.
Damn. Sounds important.
Yeah, it's very important, actually. it's like in the history of like the world, it's pretty important.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no big deal. The Thebans and the Macedonians were pretty evenly matched in terms of numbers, but the Macedonian skill would just ultimately prevail, right? They had the Macedonian phalanx and the Greek phalanx just could not compete.
Right. Macedonian greater than.
So while the rest of the Theban army would eventually just hightail it out of there, the Sacred Band would not run, and they stood their ground.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. Our boys, all 300 men, would die on the battlefield, and the previously undefeated Sacred Band would cease to exist.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know, it is.
All of them.
So, a large part of this victory for Philip, by the way, was because of his immensely popular and ingenious son, known as Alexander.
Yay!
And yes, listeners, it's that Alexander.
The Great.
The Great.
That's so interesting because in my deep knowledge of Alexander the Great, it's very vast, and it primarily comes from that film.
The one with Colin Farrell.
The one with Colin Farrell. That's the extent of my knowledge of Alexander the Great. And in the movie, they made Philip seem like a real, kind of like a loser.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't think they gave him a fair shake. I think there was some, like, an element of truth to that. Like, he was a drunk, right?
Oh,
but
okay.
So was Alexander.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, Alexander was as
well.
Oh,
because they didn't water down their wine, right?
Yeah, they got... Yeah, this is a fun fact. Like, so in ancient Greek and even in later in ancient Roman society, it was not okay to get, like, really, like, effed up.
Yeah, you couldn't get wasted.
You couldn't get wasted. It was like, you get buzzed and that was it, right?
Right.
Macedonians, no, they were, like, the frat stars of the ancient world. I'm so sorry, guys, that I even used that word. But they had, like, straight up, like, for frat ragers.
They were like work hard, play hard.
They really were.
Okay.
They just got absurdly drunk, and they were polygamous as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Macedonian men would take multiple wives.
Yeah, Philip had multiple wives,
he
right?
He did, yes. Yeah. Including Olympias, Alexander's mother.
Mm-hmm. Angelina Jolie. Yeah.
Colin Farrell's mother, because that makes sense.
Total babe.
Seriously.
Even today.
So, you know, ultimately, that only defeat that the Sacred Band ever had was at the hands of, like, some of the greatest generals in the ancient world. Like, Alexander the Great, maybe the greatest general of the ancient world. Like, all the ancient world. Like, you know, I think his only competition would be later on would be, like, Caesar. But even then, like, still, regardless, like, just... So the only reason I'm making such a point on this is because it's not like they were just like, defeated by some, whatever.
Some rando.
No, it was just because they just happened, unfortunately.
The best of the best showed up.
Yes.
And beat them.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm rambling, but yes, I appreciate the kind of the wrap up there. So anyways, it's said that Philip had enormous respect for the Sacred Band. So he buried all of them in neat lines next to each other on the battlefield.
Oh, that's actually kind of nice.
Yeah, I think he had an enormous respect. And also since
he respects game, right,
and he was a political prisoner of Thebes, and he was treated well my knowledge. Yeah, so...
Yeah, he must have been to have that any sort of reverence or respect for
right.
him.
Right, and mm-hmm. I think he had some pretty deep respect.
So, you never answered my question that I was, in the back of my mind. I was trying not to jump in case you were going to get to it.
Yeah.
Were the men in the band, were they couples prior to joining, or were they coupled off upon joining?
That's a good question, then. I don't know the answer. It seemed, just based off of my research, is that it was from before. But again, I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Because that's more romantic, so that's yes. what I want it to be.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
And then, so there was like, what was the older guy called?
Let me go back into my notes here. What is it? The older is the Arastes, or the lover. And the younger was the Aromer. Yeah, the beloved.
Okay. And here was my second question.
Yes.
Do you know if they took wives?
No. They did not.
They just had each other?
Yes.
Okay, third question.
Yes.
Why did Plato think that gay men were the ones to conquer the world?
I think it's because it goes back to they were always enamored with the past. Like they always thought
that's crazy because they're the super past.
I know, right?
It's so and weird it's to just, think about.
It's just like typical humans.
We romanticize always, the past.
And they absolutely heavily romanticize the past, right? To us, we know that Heracles and Achilles and Patroclus and all that, mm-hmm. they were, they're
legends.
They're legends, right? They're myths. Yeah. But to them, that was history. That was real to them.
Right.
And so Heracles with his lover, they could destroy, destroy any army, right? Achilles.
He was a hero. He's a Greek
hero.
Yeah,
he was a hero. And then Achilles and Patroclus, the same thing. Achilles would do anything for Patroclus. And that was kind of that mentality, right?
Yeah.
That strategy was if we could just pair up these great fighters that love each other, mm-hmm. they could conquer the world.
Because then, I wonder if the idea is because when you send out an army of men with wives, they eventually want to go home, mm-hmm. right? They're like, well, I have a wife and I have kids and stuff like that waiting.
Right.
For me, and obviously in this time, there was no way for them to biologically have children with their lover if both are the same sex. So right. I wonder if it's oh, no, they won't have kids to worry about. And then they're not going to have a wife at home that they're I need to get back to her.
Yeah, exactly.
If their focus is more, their whole life is the military.
Yeah, and it's the man standing next to them.
Yeah, their whole life is killing and the person who's beside them doing right. killing.
And they're going to do everything they can. They're going to fight as hard as they can because the person they love is standing next to them, right? And that's kind of
The love motivates them.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I didn't even think of that because I would have just been then put their wives in there with them, but they didn't see women that way at all.
No, they did not see women as fighters, right?
So I also wonder if this is related at all to their displeasure, their I don't know how to their lack of value of female traits in general. If they're oh, men are so much better. What's better than one man? Two men.
Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily wrong because they definitely did not. Women were always, it wasn't until later on, Hellenistic era that women played more of a part and just and got more say
in society.
In society in general.
Yeah.
This time, women were really second-class citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. And they weren't allowed to do, they couldn't go outside of their houses, I think, without a husband's
right.
permission.
Right, and some, yeah, and every polis was different, but, in most of them, you were absolutely a second-class citizen.
Wow.
And you were either, the property, essentially, of either your father or mm-hmm. later on your husband.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting because that obviously stood the test of time throughout human history across cultures and nations. And
right.
That seed really, really stuck.
Yes, exactly.
Desafortunadamente.
Well, anyways, going back to the story here, it's not even done.
It's not done? Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought it was done. And I was like, I must ask all my questions.
No, no, it's okay. We're going to fast forward a lot now.
Okay.
We're going to the 19th century, so the 1800s now. So to put, also I should mention this too, on top of the burial there was a statue of a massive lion.
Oh, because lions are cool.
And so, and yeah. also it does show that Philip absolutely respected these men,
right,
even though he just butchered them. But anyways, so
it was a pleasure butchering you all.
So excavations in the 19th century started by just way of chance encounter, discovered not only the lion mentioned in the ancient text, but also the bodies of the sacred band.
Oh my God. They
found
the bones
them
were still there?
By just a a freak chance encounter.
They weren't looking for them.
They weren't looking. Basically, the story, long story short, is I think it was an architect was just like messing around with his friends like 200 years ago.
Silly architects.
Yeah, silly architects. And he just tripped over this like marble thing and he looked into it. He's like, oh, that's kind of weird. And he just dug a little bit and he found like, you know, like kind of the head of a lion. And he's like, oh, this is weird. So he went to Athens and said like, hey, I found this thing. And then they started excavations over the course of like decades, right? And they found all of this. And so to my research, though, only 254 bodies were found of the 300.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, why, mm-hmm. but maybe there was, I don't know, something going on. I don't know, maybe like some of the bodies were lost or whatever.
Yeah, or died elsewhere and they couldn't find them when they initially buried them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, to me, it's always super interesting when archaeology backs up historical texts.
Yeah, that's I so love that. Crazy.
I know, and thousands of years later.
Wow.
And so now... That is the story of the Sacred Band of Thebes.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
I know, what? Isn't that so dope?
I've never, ever heard of that, and I love it so much.
I know, it's so cool.
Interesting. And it's also interesting that, like, Alexander comes up, because he was also, again, they wouldn't have thought of it the way we think of it, but he also had male lovers.
He did, yes. He had a Persian, for sure he had, like, a male Persian consort. I forgot his name, but then and also there's always rumor that he and Hephaestion, or you call him Hep C for
short.
I can't
say his name.
Hephaestion, yeah, they were kind of
Jared Leto.
They were like
Colin Farrell or Colin Firth. Which Colin?
Colin Farrell
and Jared Leto.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, they were. You know, it could have been. You know, more.
They
than
were
buddies.
More than buddies. Yeah. Yeah. But then modern historians often would look at these historical figures that were in homosexual relationships and be like, they were just like the best of friends.
I mean, you could say that.
Isn't that true though? For a
You're
long time,
my best friend.
Yeah. For a long time though, that's how it was told. It was like, wow, they just were really, really close.
Yeah, that is true.
But it's like, yeah, they were really, really close. They were in love.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yes. And so before we end this, I do want to give my sources.
Yeah,
so.
Go for it.
I don't forget. One of the really great article I found was on the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they did a great job in, you know, telling the story. Also, worldhistory.org, History Daily, Heritage Daily, Britannica.com.
Love Britannica.
I know, they're killing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, our favorite.
Wikipedia.
Absolutely.
Oh, awesome. Okay, one more thing before we wrap up.
Yes.
I want to say, I think what's really cool about learning these stories of, you know, and they lived in such different worlds, it's impossible to compare their societies to our societies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's cool because obviously for so long here in our culture, we had the pervasive myth that being gay means you're not strong.
Right.
Or masculine.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Or tough, or all of those like BS things that came up. And it's like, it's just lovely to see like, this is not, those beliefs aren't inherent. They're made up.
Yes, exactly.
As we go along.
Especially, I mean,
because look, they were like, these are the most masculine. These are the toughest. These are the strongest.
And we would consider that, you know, very gay, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, that's so interesting how that changes, and I think it's really important to shed light on so many of our biases are just that. They're just made up biases.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no merit. It's just humans being, you know.
Human. Yeah, seriously. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. It sounded like you did.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I know.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed actually researching this. And the first time I heard about the Sacred Band of Thebes, I was like, oh my God, this is, I like immediately, I'm like, I'm absolutely doing an episode on this.
Oh, good.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been telling me, he's been teasing like, oh, I have such a cool one.
Yeah.
And it was really great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for listening. And thank you listeners for listening.
One more question.
Yes.
You gave me so many questions. Do you know if you can see the remains anywhere?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't check,
okay.
Honestly.
You guys let us know, because I'm too lazy to Google it. Someone else Google it. Let us know if we could go see the remains.
Yeah, I know you can see. I've seen pictures of the lion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can see the lion.
That's good enough.
He looks like fierce.
I think this means, weirdos, we all got to go to Greece.
Yes, I know. Oh, I really, dude, we should definitely do like a meetup in Greece.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Yay.
Rome and Athens, right?
Rome and Athens and a little party in some other spots as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I really want to go to like Persepolis, but it's ruined. So, you know what? Who like made it ruins? Alexander,
you feisty yeah. rascal.
And you know why? Because he was hammered and some woman was like, maybe you should just destroy it. And he's like, okay. That's literally one of the accounts of how it was destroyed.
Oh my God, babe. You've got the facts this episode. You've got the fiery facts.
I love the most like obscure, like random facts.
That's why we do this.
That's why we do this.
Well, weirdos, we hope you all enjoyed. Oh, that was a bit of a longer episode for yeah. us. Sorry. I was very engaged, as you all could tell. But have a good holiday. Do not forget to do the amazing things of rating, reviewing, subscribing, sharing this podcast with anyone who you think may enjoy it to help us continue to grow. Like, we wound up on that awesome list.
Yeah.
Like, everything's going to be in the show notes, but you all are helping us grow so much, and we really appreciate the feedback and any guidance, any suggestions you all have. Please let us know.
Yes, and you can always reach us at History for Weirdos on Instagram, mm-hmm. and also historyforweirdos@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, weirdos. Until next time.
Adios.